Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are still here to talk about more M. Night Shyamalan movies.
So
hopefully, buckle up.
Yeah, you're here for that. If you're not a fan of M. Night Shyamalan, you probably have been skipping the last couple episodes anyway. So
that's, well, you know, what are you going to do, right?
I didn't mean for that to come out so negative.
What a bummer.
I know. Yeah, we're talking redo.
About, yeah, we're talking about the two movies. First, The Happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Katie's recap, and then my recap of Signs,
yeah,
which came out a long, long time ago.
So you get two for the price of one today.
Yes. But before we go into that, what's new with you, Katie?
Well, what's new with me is I'm sober right now, unlike when we recorded our last episode. And I mentioned...
Like for all time?
No. Ah! No, just today. Because, no, I mentioned to Tom after recording the last episode, I was like, no, yeah, like, I knew I was, like, buzzed at the time. And I, like, was aware that I was kind of, like, stumbling over some of my words or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's not great. I probably shouldn't record when I've had, like, that much to drink or whatever, even though it hadn't really been that much. But, and then Tom goes, yeah, you like fully repeated like one whole part of some, like, I don't know if it was of my recap or what, but he was like, yeah, you like read it and you got to the end and then you just went back to the beginning and read it again. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I had no idea.
I didn't notice.
Well, yeah. And we haven't listened to the episode yet. And so I don't know if that's accurate what he pointed out.
We could have our engineer, master engineer, edit it so we'll sound great. If you feel like you need to do that.
Perhaps. Maybe we can see how egregious it is first.
And you're like, you know what? Who cares about that?
Yeah, I said it twice for emphasis.
I don't even care about you or you.
Or anybody.
Anybody
here. Where's my drink?
Tell me more, Katie.
Yes, please. Tell me for a third time.
Let me hear more about it.
But yeah, so I wanted to apologize to any of our listeners whose delicate sensibilities were offended by my slurring and babbling.
They may not even know.
Well, now they do. Cat's out of the bag.
Edited out.
Well, I mean, if they didn't know, then they just thought I was either a moron or I had a stroke.
Like, you bit your tongue.
I did.
That's what happened.
I sure did. I got mush mouth. So yeah, aside from that.
Like Joe Calamazzo, like you had food poisoning. I ate bad fish. Joe Calamazzo.
I know, I was thinking about the one where she was like, you know, I had a Vicodin and then I had a whatever and I'm right at that sweet spot and in 15 minutes I'm going to need a nap.
And you're like, that's me.
For real. Yeah, but other than making that official retraction, it's, you know, it's the same old for both of us. You know, we've got 2 weeks of school left. The last week doesn't count because we can't actually do anything. We're just jailers. Mm-hmm. So one more week of actually teaching and assigning work and grading work and then report cards and stuff like that. But I'm in a really good place in terms of my end of the year checklist. So I'm feeling pretty good and, I'm excited for summer vacation and I'm excited for, like, you know, just kind of the fun vibe of the last couple of weeks where things don't really seem to matter quite as much and, you know, you're not going to stress out about anything and it's kind of a fun time.
You're like, I'm done with you people.
Yeah. So. I've taught you everything I could possibly teach you and you're not listening anymore anyway. So
yeah,
go with God
you.
And I will. Cause like, and honestly, we last night, I went and watched, they had just an in school 3v3 basketball tournament. And, so I went and watched the, fifth grade session and part of the sixth grade session. And I'm watching the fifth graders and like, cause those kids, like I've had them this year for just for literature, but it wasn't my homeroom, but like next year, like, so now I know them and I've started building those relationships and then next year they're going to be my homeroom students. Mm-hmm. And I was actually like starting to get kind of excited about like thinking ahead to having those kids and what, how it's going to be fun to like go on that whole sixth grade journey with them too. And so, it's a good spot to be in.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
You
are going to tell me what's new with you.
I'm not. I glanced at the checklist end of year.
You're like, I'm aware there is a checklist.
I know there's one.
I've heard it mentioned.
I'm like, nah. No, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. It'll be fine. And then...
Well, it probably just seems so boring to you since you're not moving classrooms for once.
For once.
Yeah.
Jeez.
You're like, I could do this amount of work in half a day.
Easy breezy, lemon squeezy. I'm like, print out report cards. Easy breezy. I just have to do them.
Yeah.
I have to do them. It'll be fine. But that's a future marriage problem, like a Monday problem for me. That's what I usually do on Memorial Day, is I think about the troops... And two report cards.
Is it? Okay. Sorry. It looked like it wasn't advancing on the screen. Doesn't it look like it's not advancing? Oh, it just jumped ahead.
Ooh.
That's exciting. This is me watching the software on the screen that is recording this podcast.
She's like, oh my God.
Yeah, maybe I am drunk.
I was so drunk last time. I didn't even notice this happened.
Oh, man.
So what's new? Let's see. We went to... Speakeasy, and we insisted that Tom and Katie come about 7 hours ahead of time.
We're like, we want to eat lunch and then sit and think about lunch for a couple of hours.
Like, why did we decide this?
And I was like, why? I didn't do the math right on this visit. Because my students had a basketball championship game that afternoon at 12:30, and I was like, oh, I can't go. We're supposed to be at Meredith and Victor's at 12. And I'm like, wow, I really could have gone to that basketball game and come after.
I know. And I'm like, why? But that's just us. We're not math teachers. We're just so worried about being late places.
That's true. We hate being late.
And Victor hates it. Katie hates it. I'm indifferent. I like showing up just on time. Yeah. But everyone else seems to want to show up.
No, Tom and I are both painfully early. And I've said many times that either of us were a chronically late person, we wouldn't still be married.
Yeah. Yeah. So we enjoyed some brisket that... my husband made, and it was delicious. Then we waited for about 5 hours, kind of. And then we went to the speakeasy, which was like, it was fun, but then they had no food. So then it was like so long since we ate our lunch that I was like, I should have put
the brisket was a distant memory.
I know. I was like, brisket, I should put some
in your pockets.
Yeah, like pocket brisket. But it was fun. It was the speakeasy. It was like a full, like, immersive experience where it was like, all 1920s people wearing that kind of clothing and or costumes, and we dressed up like that too. Mm-hmm. And it was just really fun, and there are actors acting things out around you, and you're kind of in it also, so that was pretty fun. But I would have liked it if they'd had at least a few snacks or something.
Yeah, a little something to nosh on. I did notice, because this was the second time that I'd gone this year, third time going ever. And the previous time, depending on what day of the weekend you go, the rules are different.
Yeah.
And the visit that I went, that we went to, Meredith and I and the guys, they are not restrictive or not as restrictive on cell phone usage.
Yeah.
Like, you are allowed to take photos and take videos. Like, obviously they say, like, you know, keep them away as much as possible to preserve the, like, 1920s, like, vibe or whatever. But then we also had at least one, it seemed like maybe two giant tourist groups, like, buy tickets for this one last minute.
Yeah.
So they weren't in costume, and then they definitely were coming into it with, I don't know what their expectations were, or if they knew anything about it before they popped in, but there was a lot more people just with their cell phones up the whole time, like, videoing and taking pictures of everything. And having, like, just gone on a night when that's not allowed, like, gave me that really, like, stark contrast of, oh, they're not just full of shit. It really does take away from the experience to have people doing that.
Yeah.
There's that girl at the bar that had her flashlight on.
Yeah, I know. And you're like, what are you doing? I think Victor and I had just started dating when we went, and it was like pre-COVID. So it was it's been a while. And
yeah, it was 2019, because we ran into each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, I think it's Katie. I was like, probably not. Let's go. But they're at that time, it was like one of the nights where you couldn't have technology on at all. And the night flew by. I had no watch on, obviously, because my Apple Watch, I couldn't wear it. And then it was time to go. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was a crazy experience. And it was really fun. And it's like, It's really hard, I think. I think the part of it is people don't like to, like, relent control, I guess, or give it away. And you know, not having access to their phones or their technology because they want to know what time it is or they want to be able to, whatever, take photos. But it felt like I kind of appreciated it more. It felt like a more authentic experience
where it forces you to be in the moment.
Yes. Where I couldn't escape or whatever.
Yeah. And so it's not an escape room.
Right. So I liked it more the first time, I think. Yeah. Probably because of the reason you said. And then also I was less hungry. Because we ate a big dinner and then went.
Yeah.
And then this time we ate lunch and then waited.
Because we had the early admission. So we had to be there at 3:50 in the afternoon. So we couldn't really.
Should have had a slice.
Should have had a slice beforehand. Yeah. But yeah, no, if there's anybody that ever gets an opportunity to do something like that, you should definitely do it. It's very fun. It's a fun experience.
Yeah, it was fun. And I got to wear my reception dress.
Yes.
That looks very Art Deco.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
But. So we are here to talk about the two movies. You are giving the recap of The Happening first.
Yes, even though it came out later, we're gonna start with this because I insisted on going first. Because I'm the youngest in my family, and that's just how we roll.
And I'm the oldest, and I just say, sure, okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's not worth fighting.
I don't care about this.
So The Happening came out in 2008, and it was a pretty recognizable cast. Mark Wahlberg was the main character. Zooey Deschanel was in it. John Leguizamo. Something that I noted... And it was actually, I noticed it first when I was rewatching Signs, which I did before I did my recap on The Happening, that the director of photography on both Signs and The Happening is Tak Fujimoto, who was the director of photography for Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, geez.
And
that's
a pretty big... Spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he also did Sixth Sense as well. So those are the only three projects that he's done with M. Night Shyamalan is Sixth Sense, The Happening, and Signs. But then, also Silence of the Lambs. Interesting. But anyway, so that's our star-studded cast. It starts, we're in Central Park, and a girl on a bench who I realized, I was like, why is she familiar? She's the quote-unquote virgin from Cabin in the Woods.
Yes, yeah. she's like, what's going on?
I'm reading a book. So she notices some screams and people just freezing in place, and then her pal next to her pulls the, stick out of her hairdo and stabs herself in the throat with it. As one does. And then it cuts to a construction site a few blocks away and a body falls from the roof. Then another and another. And the foreman looks up and sees the crew is just walking off the end of girders on the roof of the building to their death.
Yeah.
And I thought, when I was watching this movie the first time, this opening I really liked it and it really surprised me because one of the things about M. Night Shyamalan films that I've always thought was that they are not particularly gory or graphic. And not particularly violent. And so, I mean, obviously there's exceptions and elements where, you know, he includes that in some movies would be more and some would be less. But this one, the deaths in this opening scene were pretty shocking. And then there's a handful of other moments throughout the movie where it's similarly shocking and graphic.
Yes. And there's really not any lead up. It's just very
out of the gate.
You're like, wait, what's happened? This two friends are on a bench talking and suddenly one's dead. So very quick,
just stabbed herself in the throat.
Yes.
No prompting. So now we're in a high school science class in Philadelphia. It's taught by Elliot, played by Mark Wahlberg. So Mark Wahlberg as a high school science teacher is kind of hilarious.
I love that.
I love it. He's talking to his class about ecological mysteries.
What happened with the bees?
And the scientific method.
I love him.
Until he gets pulled out by administration. All the teachers are told that there's been an airborne terrorist attack in New York City and they're closing the school. Fellow teacher Julian, who is John Leguizamo's character, says that they can go to his mom's house out of town to get out of town. Yeah. So Elliot goes home to get his wife, Alma, who is played by Zooey Deschanel. And Alma is watching TV where they're describing, you know, the reports of the attack, and they call it a, quote, natural compound. And they're saying that it is, quote, flipping the preservation switch in people's brains and making them suicidal.
It feels like just, you know, that part where it's flipping the switch, it reminded me a little bit of if somebody can relate to this, maybe when you have intrusive thoughts, you know, when you maybe are at the edge of a mountain or, you
know,
whatever.
What if I just stepped off? Yeah. I have that when I'm driving. What if I just, you know, turn the wheel into the median.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
So in my mind, I'm like, maybe it just like, I don't know, maybe it does flip the switch, sure, but also I was like kind of thinking it through. I'm like, what if it just like allows the intrusive thoughts to happen, kind of,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's not turning them on, but and that's what they described it. It was turning off the inhibitions.
Right, yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting, just how they said that, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Elliot and Alma meet Julian and his daughter, Jess. Jess, I don't know, she's like 8. I think they say she's 8 at one point. Little girl. Sweet mm-hmm. little girl. The four of them meet at the train station, but Julian's wife, Yvette, got caught in traffic, so she's going to come after. The four of them are going to go along ahead. But now, in the city of Philadelphia, again near a park, the wind rustles through the trees, and the same thing happens. Everyone freezes, and then suddenly a cop pulls his gun and shoots himself, and then a cab driver gets out of the car, picks up the gun, and shoots himself, and then a woman on the sidewalk comes over, picks up the gun, and shoots herself. Mm-hmm. So, like, everybody, like, it's very formulaic, and it's that it becomes, like, a pretty spooky trigger is when the wind starts rustling through the trees.
Right.
And everybody freezes. And then their actions after that, their self-harming actions that happen then are done, like, they're in a trance. Like, very calmly, very slowly, very deliberately, they just find the most available means for killing themselves, and they do it.
Yeah, it's super robotic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, not much pageantry, just like, oh, I'm no, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what was, I think, was so interesting about that gun scenario, because it was like one person takes the gun, kills himself, then obviously it gets dropped on the ground when he mm-hmm. falls to his death. Then yeah. someone else walks over, picks it up, uses it, falls to the ground, drops the gun. Another, like, that, I think, using that scenario really kind of emphasized that, just kind of like, okay, there's a gun, kill myself. Okay, yes. There's a gun, you know.
And it's very silent.
Yeah.
No one's really...
Nobody's talking.
No one's crying, no one's tearing. No. You know, being like, no, I can't do this, you know, or zero emotion, mm-hmm. basically.
Okay, so now they're on the train. Julian talks to Yvette on the phone and finds out that she ended up getting on a bus to Princeton in Jersey. People start hearing that Philadelphia has been, quote, attacked now, too. And Elliot says, another park?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is a good moment to mention that this is Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that throughout this movie, his acting is unnecessarily dramatic in his lovable, freaking amazing, awesome, dumb Mark Wahlberg way.
Yeah, let me fly.
Yes. Yeah, him in a dramatic role, it's hard to take him seriously a little bit. Because he, like, there's some guy I follow on Instagram that can flawlessly mimic like a dozen different celebrity voices, mm-hmm. like without skipping a beat. And his Mark Wahlberg is like spot perfect. On. So like, again, not only is he a science teacher sounding like Mark Wahlberg, but now he's trying to make like intelligent observations in Mark Wahlberg's voice.
Another park.
Yeah. Another park.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know if he said that, but
but it was definitely in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But soon the train that they're on stops in the middle of nowhere and they're all kicked off. Elliot presses for an explanation from the conductors and they finally say that they've lost communication. He goes, with who? And they go, everyone.
Everyone.
So you're like, oh, farts.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
Good. That's not good. So everyone from the train troops into a local diner. Reports are still coming in of attacks, not necessarily just in Philadelphia, but all over. And this is where we see the video of the guy walking into a lion enclosure at a zoo.
Yeah.
And like walking around, walking up to the lions, like touching them, prodding them until they finally are, you know, bothered enough to attack him.
Do what lions do.
Do what lions do. Because at first the lions couldn't give a shit that he was in there, but he went and like touched
him.
He's
like, "Go hungry?
Yeah.
Take
Wants,
your hand.
Want my arm? Want my
well,
other
he
arm?"
Didn't say it. He's just like, "Here you go."
Some reports that they're hearing suggest that it might not be terrorists, but they confirm that it is still limited to the northeast part of the United States. So everyone in this diner hauls ass out of there to go to the western edge of the affected area. Like, everybody with a vehicle just gone.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, our friends don't have a vehicle because they were on a train. So Elliot finds what I described, some groovy plant folk, this married couple, that they have a nursery just down the road. So they offer to give our three friends a ride.
They look familiar, too. I know them from other projects.
I think
for sure.
So. But in the meantime, Julian has found a Jeep that is heading to Princeton in Jersey. So, and they have one spot. So he's going to go with them to go after Yvette because he can't get her on the phone anymore. And he leaves Jess with Elliot and Alma. As that group stops by the plant folks' house on their way out of town, the guy mentions that he thinks the whole thing is plants releasing chemicals, because obviously he's a plant guy, knows a lot about plants.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Julian gets to Princeton, and the first thing that this vehicle finds is gardeners hanging from the trees alongside the road. So there's like all of these ladders that I don't know if they were like, you know, tree surgeons or just standard gardeners, but they all had ladders that they propped up into these really tall trees and just hung themselves from the trees.
Yeah, it's all bad. And the nursery owner guy is also in the village and A Brother Art Thou and a ton of other movies.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, he's got that face. I know him. Just a very recognizable, like big eyes kind of fellow.
Okay, so they're seeing all of these people hanging from the trees. So they recognize that this place has, quote unquote, been attacked, too. So they're trying to roll up the windows and close all the gaps. But it's a freaking Jeep Wrangler. So in a moment, we're watching the Jeep drive down the road. It stops. Then it accelerates into a tree and the driver's thrown through the windshield. Then we assume is dead. Julian gets out of the vehicle calmly, sits down in the middle of the road, picks up a piece of glass and cuts his wrists.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Yeah, so very, very short time with our friend John Leguizamo in this film.
Which is too bad because I love him.
He's amazing.
I love him so much.
Now, Elliot's crew is on the move, but soon they get to a point where they can see ahead that there are a bunch of bodies laying across the road. So they turn around and go in the other direction. But at the next crossroads, they encounter an army vehicle and the soldier, who's played by Kendall Roy from Succession.
Oh, God. I've never actually seen that show.
Oh, that's a good show.
It's on my list, so yeah. I'll watch it probably this summer. But yeah.
But anyway, so it's very funny if you know that actor
from
that
character. Our two movies have two Succession film stars, Rory Culkin.
It's Kieran Culkin that's in Succession.
Oh, shoot, really?
Not Rory, yeah.
Whatever.
And what's the other one? Oh, Kendall?
No, I just meant in Signs.
In Signs.
So it's his brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rory's
I retract my statement. Okay, continue.
So I call the soldier Private Kendall. And he reports to them that his base was affected. And soon people are arriving from every direction at this crossroads of, you know, just country roads, two-lane roads, reporting the quote-unquote attack back where they were coming from. So they're like, well, we can't go in any of these directions because everybody's coming from all these directions saying you can't go back there.
Yeah. Nowhere is safe except mm-mm. for just right here on the side of the road, literally. Yeah.
So they all crowd around a woman who is taking a phone call from her daughter who is in Princeton. And it shows that the attack, I keep putting attack in quotes, is happening there as well, because the daughter, while she's still lucid, is saying that everybody's dead outside, there's bodies outside, and then you hear evidence of her like throwing herself out the window. Mm-hmm. And so
well, the mom initially says, like, hey, just, you know, go look out the window, look at the
where the tree is,
you know, just concentrate on other stuff, and he's like,
get away from the window with the tree,
get away from the window. There's trees out there.
Stay away from the tree.
I apologize, Mark Wahlberg. If you're listening, I'm sure he has this. He's definitely subscribed to this.
Absolutely. So. You have to embrace it.
And
he's done okay in spite of it. So.
We love you. Yeah,
we do
like,
love you.
He's like, I'm not actually, I don't even need your opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm actually fine.
Okay, so
she dies.
With report from that girl on the phone coming from Princeton, now Elliot, Alma, and Jess all know that Julian is almost certainly dead because that's where he was.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like anybody's immune to it. It seems like if you're there, you're impacted.
Yeah,
you just
absolutely.
Maybe like delayed slightly for people who are observing this stuff happening, and then
Okay, so now Elliot is starting to believe that it really is the plants. And he talks to his new friend, the plant guy, about it. They discuss how plants can communicate and the skills that different plants have for self-defense against threats. Normally threats like insects or something like that, like normal threats to plants. But Elliot's really trying to, approach this scientifically as a high school science teacher would.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's also become clear that the event is affecting areas of smaller and smaller populations as time goes on. So Private Kendall is going to lead them to an area of low population, but ironically also exhorts them to, quote, stay in groups. So Elliot's crew is in a smaller group that leaves a bit later. And as they head off across the fields, then the breeze comes and stirs the grasses, just like we've been seeing the breeze rustling the leaves in the trees. And suddenly Private Kendall, who is way up ahead of them with the larger group, starts shouting about his weapon. Like one so of those.
He starts going Full Metal Jacket.
Yes. My weapon is my friend.
And you're like, oh, God.
This is bad news bears.
There are many of them, but this one's mine. You're like, oh, shit.
And so
you better run.
Elliot's group is hearing a lot of gunshots, and they're like obviously freaking out. What do we do? Elliot, tell us what to do. Tell us what to do. And it's like this super close up on Mark Wahlberg's face going, you gotta give me a time to think. You gotta let me think. And he's like, look at it scientifically. Identify the variables. Collect the data. Interpret the data. We're like, you can do this, Mark. And he determines that since the other group was bigger, that must be why the attack was set off. And so trying to, you know, keeping that in mind and also trying to stay ahead of the wind, their little crew races off towards some homes that they can see in the distance, picking up two teenage boys who are Jared and Josh. And this is another connection. Josh is played by Spencer Breslin, Abigail Breslin's older brother.
Aww.
And Abigail Breslin is in Signs.
Mm-hmm.
So this group storms a model home. They do find a map. One of the things I really like in this scene is Elliot starts talking to a houseplant. Like yeah. He's like really fully embracing this idea. He's like, we're just here to borrow some things. We're not going to hurt you.
We're not going to cause no trouble.
We'll be out of here before you know it. Just stay calm. And then he goes, this plant is plastic. I'm talking to a plastic plant.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still doing it. It's like such a, and that was like, it was really hard to imagine that he wasn't to some extent tongue in cheek with this character. Like that can't have been his best attempt at dramatic acting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like he had to be like being, and there was some parts that did seem intentionally humorous.
Yeah. I mean, there's a that movie Fear he was in.
Yeah.
Where he was downright, he was scary.
Yeah. He was very like, frightening.
Very,
in that
very
movie.
Frightening. So yeah. He can definitely do dramatic, but just not like dramatic / somebody who's an approachable character. He can be either like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Or
a
really funny.
Goofy, hilarious guy.
And I think that's hard in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, difficult.
Yeah, to go off on a small tangent, I had actually never seen Fear. I just watched it for the first time fairly recently and found it very, very upsetting.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and only for this reason, that Reese Witherspoon at that age reminded me exactly of Grace. Two primary reasons. One, both Grace and Reese Witherspoon have very pointy chins.
Mm-hmm.
And second, the way that girls dressed when the movie Fear came out is the style that has come back for girls now.
Yeah.
So her outfits in that movie are the kinds of things Grace wears now.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'm watching a movie about
it all comes full circle.
My teenage daughter in an abusive relationship with Mark Wahlberg. And I'm really, really identifying with the stepmom who he's flirting with too.
Oh my God. No, if you go into a Kohl's and take your child shopping or whatever, it's like Contembo casuals.
Yeah.
It's very, I'm like, oh my God, there's a macrame top.
where am I?
What's happening? All right.
Anyhow.
Tangent aside.
Yes. So now the group, they're leaving the model home. I mean, partly because one of the things is they need food, and this is a model home, so it doesn't have any food in it. But they're heading off, still trying to move west to get out of this affected area. But outside, they start, they see groups of people in the distance, like fairly large groups. He's like, oh no, their groups are too big.
We better get out of here.
But they see him in the distance running, and then the groups start freezing in place so that you can tell that they've been hit. And then one guy gets a commercial mower started up, and then it just starts, you know, running across the lawn, and he very slowly and deliberately walks over and lays down in front of it and lets it run over him.
Ugh, it definitely felt like a sinister moment.
It did. Like that sinister. Yeah, that's like, my lawnmower trigger.
Yuck.
But it was also like that was something where it didn't cut away. Like yeah. It showed it going up on him and mm-hmm. starting to like, you know, destroy his body, which that to me isn't normally M. Night Shyamalan level
no.
Graphicness.
No, usually
like he was pushing it a little bit further in this one, it seemed to me.
Yeah, I think usually the
yeah, he's a big cutaway.
You don't see most horrible things.
Okay, so this group finds another farmhouse, but the residents inside won't let them in. Josh starts being a real teenage douchebag and starts trying to break in. And he and Jared both end up getting shotgun executions for their troubles. So the people that are inside, they're like, no, get away. Get out. We're not letting you in. And then he starts like beating down the door.
Don't
so they're
bring
like,
that poison gas in here.
Like, and Mark Wahlberg's like, we're out here. We're fine. Everything's fine. See, listen to our voices. And then he goes, oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling, Mississippi. And I'm like, what? Why?
He's like,
what?
See?
What's happening? I'm like, was that I'm in like, the script?
I'm like, that makes me think.
You're totally fine.
More suspicious.
But anyway, so they end up, you know, putting their shotguns through the shutters and blasting holes into our two teenage boys.
Yeah, that's awful.
Which is very sad. So now it's just Elliot, Alma, and Jess. And the next farmhouse they find has no power running to it. And they think maybe it's abandoned, but nope. It's got a crotchety old lady who at least feeds them dinner, even though she's a little bit of a bitch about everything.
Guess I have to feed you now or offer your supper. She's played by Betty Buckley, who's also in that movie Split. She plays the therapist.
Oh, I did not make that connection. Mm-hmm. Like, the character in The Happening didn't really look familiar to me, and so I just figured I'd never seen her in anything.
Yeah, she... Yeah, I mean, she looks in Split. She's very, like, put together, wears really nice outfits and all that stuff, and this lady looks... Like, she hasn't been out in public for a long time.
Yeah, that was definitely true.
Yeah.
So at dinner, this lady, Mrs. Jones, she tells them about the ice house on the property that we used in the Underground Railroad and has a communication tube that runs to the main house. And all I kept thinking was the line from Wayne's World where he goes, aren't we lucky we were there to get all that information? Seemed extraneous at the time. Like, why is she talking about the Underground Railroad? But anyway, so the three of them stay the night and they do get a midnight visit from their crazy hostess, accusing them of planning to rob and or kill her before she turns around and shuffles back down the hall.
I know. She's like, you're going to murder me. And he's like, what? No.
And he's like, what? No, of course not. Why would you think that? Not at all. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. I know. He's like, I'm a science teacher.
I would never do something like that. I mean, my wife, maybe, but I'll take care of it. Okay, so the next morning, Mrs. Jones hasn't gotten any less crazy, and she's screaming at Elliot, and she tells him that they all have to leave before she goes out to her garden and starts muttering prayers, walking back and forth in the garden. And then the wind comes. You know, with the wind rustling through the trees again, and Elliot's like, oh, shit, and runs back inside the house and closes the door because he knows what's coming. When he gets back in the house, he can't find the girls because he woke up in bed and they were already gone. And so he doesn't know where they are. But he's inside the house and Mrs. Jones is out in the garden. Meanwhile, Mrs. Jones starts beating herself to death against the outside of the house and smashing her head through the windows.
Yeah, it was pretty gruesome.
Yeah, which was like a slightly more aggressive approach to killing yourself, but you know, it was like I said before, the available means of suicide. Like, if you have a cop's gun, bully for you, you're gonna have a quick death.
Yeah.
She, on the other hand, didn't have access to something like that, so she had to do it the old-fashioned way. And I shouldn't be so cavalier about it.
yeah, it was pretty awful.
Yeah. So Elliot goes deeper into the house to get away from the outside air, and he ends up finding the end of the talking tube that runs to the ice house, and he hears Alma and Jess's voices. The girls are out there because they went out there to play. And I keep calling them the girls, and then when I say they went out there to play, it makes it sound like, I mean, Alma's a grown woman. She took the little girl out there to play.
You know, you would assume it's more kind of like to get your mind off things.
Yes.
Know, just to go, because it's like just been tragedy, horribleness.
Mm-hmm.
The little girl,
has lost both her parents.
Both her parents. She saw those two boys, like, murdered right in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like probably, here's a little bit of joy, a little bit to go and, search out or, you know, check things out a little bit. And
They end up finding a frog that they play with. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they're playing out there so Elliot can hear their voices. And so he like calls out to them through the tube and he tells them to, shut the windows and the doors. And they do. but now like he's closed into the house and they're closed into this separate building. And it seems like the end. They actually say like, this is the end, isn't it? Because Zooey Deschanel's overacting her ass off in this too. Like she's so like, I like her. I like her very much as an actress. And in this movie, you want to punch her in her stupid face every time she opens her mouth.
I just went for tiramisu. This guy named Joey.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway, so because they can't go outside. She's like, we can't go outside at all, can we? And he's like, no, like, I guess this is the end. Now this is where I live now. I live in this basement with this talking tube. They do have a very touching chat because I didn't bother going into detail, but they've been having some, you know, marital discord. They've been out of sync emotionally in their relationship. But now they have a conversation where they're reminiscing about their first date and it's very sweet. And they decide they'd rather die together. He's like, if I'm going to die with you. And so he leaves and goes outside the house. And then she and Jess come outside of the ice house and they meet together in the middle of the yard. And there's just wind blowing all over the place and the trees are whipping around and the grass is blowing, but nothing happens. And they're just waiting and waiting and waiting and then looking around and they're like, oh, and then they go back inside and Elliot says, the event must have ended before we went out there. Like, astute observation, Mr. Science Teacher. So then the screen set tells us it's 3 months later. A scientist who's being interviewed on TV argues that it was indeed the plants defending themselves against the threat of humanity. And the reason it only happened in that one area was because it was a warning. Even though the pundit that's interviewing him says that some people still think it was the government. And that's why it was only in that one northeastern area of the United States. Elliot and Alma are raising Jess like they're now, you know, her surrogate parents. Alma finds out that she's pregnant and, you know, Elliot comes back from taking Jess to the school bus and they share the news and it's happily ever after until they cut to Paris, which I actually think it might be the Jardin des Tuileries, which is like one of the it's like the central park of Paris, from what I remember from the one, you know, week that I spent there. And you see, it begins again. You see the exact same thing, like people walking through the park and two guys having a conversation. And then one guy keeps repeating himself. And then there's a scream in the distance and then everybody freezes. And then that's it.
Yeah. And in each of these scenes, there's always a person leading their dog. And suddenly the dog's just kind of walking around, like wondering what's going on and looking at their owner. Oh, I didn't
notice that.
So I was like, oh
that makes it wouldn't affect a dog.
Yeah. The animals, I guess, aren't impacted, just the humans. So, and in all the scenes, the dogs are kind of looking up to their owner, like sniffing their legs. They're like suddenly like kind of aimless, not sure.
Yeah.
Not just sure what to do with themselves. Yeah. But.
So, I mean, it's an abrupt ending, but, you know, the implication is that like, well, that was the warning and it wasn't the only one that we're going to get.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. So should we chat about this first or do you want to do your signs recap first?
Let's chat about it.
Okay. Did you think it was scary?
I saw this in the theater, and I actually I really enjoyed it. It felt like kind of like Twilight Zone a little bit to me. But I remember clearly the people I went with didn't like it.
Oh.
I thought it was like kind of, they're like, eh. And I think maybe it was like the message, you know, because people are like very, it's very environmentalist.
Yeah, and that message is why this is my favorite M. Night
Shyamalan. And it's very divided because there's a lot of this country that still thinks it's not a thing.
Yeah. And I didn't even intentionally. I wore one of my many shirts that has trees on it today.
And it is a divisive message.
Yeah.
Amongst some people. Yeah. To me, I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, we need to take care of our planet. We need to make sure we...
I don't know what you guys have in mind for the future of our race if...
If we just, like, shit all over this situation and throw plastic into the breeze and hope for the best. But... But I also lived in Texas at the time.
Yeah.
So not to alienate fellow Texans. Where
they literally do just throw plastic into the breeze. And...
Well, yeah. And it's like, it's very... This is not important. You know, at least when I lived there, and which was most of my life up until like my late 20s. Then I moved out to California. But I was always someone who was like, I think this is, you know, we need to reuse back. Like, this is not just a sustainable situation where we're just, you know, doing whatever we feel like. But I think that is probably, I mean, it might be a little bit of a reason why people are not really fans of the movie. Mm-hmm. I liked it because I thought it was suspenseful. I thought I liked the fact that everyone was affected, mm-hmm. and there was like not a situation where one person wasn't or whatever.
Yeah, because like that's so common with like
immune or whatever.
Post-apocalyptic movies.
Yes,
there's always like random survivors that aren't affected, and you know you never know why, and sometimes you find out, and sometimes you don't. But this, right. You're right, it was like across the board.
Yeah, so everyone is impacted, and you kind of felt like you were part of it, mm-hmm. you know, in the moment with people like friends sitting on the bench and suddenly everyone around them was like dying and you're like, oh my God. And it kind of felt like you're, as a viewer, part of the this national emergency or this like local, I guess, emergency where it was very, very dangerous and scary. And mm-hmm. Anyway, so I liked it. I thought it was, and then the idea like there's really nowhere to go.
Right.
Which is fun. And what do you do if you're on foot and you're trying to run for your life, basically? Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it. I liked the movie. I remember at the time I was probably one of the lone people who liked it. Yeah. I was like, oh, that was pretty good. And I was like, that was stupid. And I'm like, oh, okay. But even though I felt like Mark Wahlberg was overacted some, I did find him endearing.
I enjoyed his character very much. It's just you kind of had to smirk at a lot of it.
Yes, and I liked John Leguizamo talking about like percentages and likelihood and stuff like that, like the odds of stuff happening. And so I was sad he was not part of the movie for longer, mm-hmm. Unfortunately. But I enjoyed it. I found it very scary and frightening and just so jarring.
Yeah,
and not like jump scares. Just like, oh, suddenly this person is acting completely. Totally calm, but then doing something incredibly violent towards themselves.
Yeah.
So, did you find it scary?
I don't know. My definition of scary, like the movies that I find scary are ones that like would leave me feeling creeped out in the dark after I've watched them. Mm-hmm. And this one didn't fall into that category. I felt like though the scenes that you just mentioned where they're like harming themselves were very jarring, were very shocking, and really well done, like well planned. And just like the choices of like, oh, a construction site. All of the guys up on this big building they're building would just start stepping off the edge.
Yeah.
And so being kind of inventive in what it would look like if this actually was happening to a population of people. Mm-hmm. And then the message is why I love this so much. I actually usually almost every year watch this on Earth Day. Mm-hmm. It's my Earth Day horror movie. I kind of wish actually that it wasn't so graphic because I would recommend it to my students.
Yeah.
Because I can see why anybody that didn't subscribe to that reality that, you know, we can't continue to use the resources on this planet the way that we have and expect our species to last. Mm-hmm. I feel like anybody who was like, you know, maybe like, oh, yeah, we need to take care of the environment, but hadn't really like given it a lot of thought or didn't feel very passionately about it, like might see a movie like this and be like, oh, shit, you know, like it might bring it home a little bit more. Or, you know, it's kind of like that movie, The Day After Tomorrow, which that's another one I absolutely love. Not a horror movie at all, but just the idea that like climate change could produce a scenario where you know, we would be confronted with superstorms or whatever that would completely change countries and political alliances. And like, because like at the end of Day After Tomorrow, like all of the American citizens that have survived are trying to cross the Mexican border to get to where they won't freeze to death if they step outside. And so they say that Mexico has agreed to accept all American refugees in exchange for forgiveness of all American debts.
Like, yeah, no kidding.
Like, and so movies like that where, you know, it seems like, well, this wouldn't really happen, you know, but at the same time,
the turntables.
Yeah. Has that happened yet? No. Is something that sudden and dramatic likely to happen, at least in our lifetimes? Probably not. But just trying to kind of like, you know, take people's shoulders and like shake them a little bit and be like, look, things could get really, really bad. Things could get really bad.
Yeah.
So that's the one of the reasons why I love this so much. And then coupled with, you know, the horrific violence, and then also Mark Wahlberg's character just being so Mark Wahlberg, mm-hmm. Is wonderful. And it's hard to imagine how different the film would have been with a different actor, mm-hmm. in that role, like an actor that you could see legitimately playing a high school science teacher.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm trying to like draw a name that might, like, even if you took like a James McAvoy.
Yeah.
You know, from our previous films that we talked about, like somebody that you can naturally take a little bit more seriously. Like, I think the film would have had a very different feel and maybe been scarier.
Yes. Yeah.
But I wouldn't trademark.
For anyone. No way.
No way.
I love him. And yeah. The Departed.
Oh my God, that was the best. I think other guys will always be my favorite ones of his movies.
Oh my gosh, I can't watch that movie and not like cry laughing.
It is so freaking funny. He's like,
I hate the way you fart. It's feminine. He's like,
did you just scream America?
America.
Yeah. But anyway, so so that's The Happening. Yep. So now we can rewind in time 6 years to 2002 for the release of Meredith's movie Signs.
The early aughts. Okay, so a man wakes with a start and we see a photo of him with his family. He was wearing, is he a minister? Or they call him father.
He had been a reverend.
A reverend. So he's wearing a reverend's collar in the photo, his family photo. And then, and he's obviously played by Mel Gibson, who's, mm-hmm. you know, you may have heard of him. So, so he's getting dressed and you see the outline of a cross on the wall where it once used to be. Mm-hmm. A lot of photos and things, and especially religious stuff is not. You can tell it's kind of been cleaned off the walls, basically. So he and his brother, Merrill, run outside when they hear screaming from the children. And they all find crop circles. They live on I forgot the title card of where they live. They live in the middle of Pennsylvania?
Buck County, Pennsylvania. Yeah, yes. I found it was actually filmed. They leased a plot of land in Delaware to do the actual filming. But it's set in Pennsylvania, just like all of his movies are. But then there were the couple of like town scenes that they shot were in somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Okay. So it's they live on a farm basically, and they have a bunch of crops and stuff like that, and they find crop circles. So Graham, who, as I mentioned, is played by Mel Gibson, calls the cops, the sheriff, and he thinks that it's just some locals horsing around who made this problem happen. Officer Paskey? Paskey, played by Cherry Jones, who I love, shows up and she looks at the crop circles with Graham. She keeps referring to him as father, mentioning the animals around the county are acting really funny. And he's like, please don't call me father. But everyone just calls him father. They're just used to referring to it, him like that. So meanwhile, the children, Morgan and Beau, who are played by, this is Abigail Breslin's her first film debut.
God,
and then
so adorable.
Which one? Culkin?
Rory
Culkin. I had mistaken him for also in Scream. He's in Scream 4, I think, as well.
Rory is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so Charlotte.
It is hard to tell the other ones apart, especially from different ages.
Yeah, and they have like brunette hair and they all have very, very similar features. And anyway, so they're giving their German Shepherd, Houdini, some water, and suddenly he starts acting weird and starts barking at Bo, and Morgan has to defend his little sister and ends up killing Houdini. And it's very kind of very like a sad scene. So then later that evening, Bo comes into Graham's room and tells him there's a monster outside of a room and also asks for some water.
Yeah, that was like in every trailer.
Yeah.
There's a monster at my door. Can I have a glass of water?
Can I have a glass of water? So Graham is putting Bo back to bed and then he sees something outside on the roof. He goes to wake Meryl and the two of them go try to scare. And then Meryl, of course, is played by Joaquin Phoenix, who we love. And he's very young and at the time. And he's in a lot of movies already at that point. He's a child actor. And then he's in I want to say he's like 20s when he did this, this movie. So they're trying to scare whoever it is away. They think it's locals who are just always up to no good. So Meryl is, they're running around and, you know, yelling and screaming. He's like, if we yell and scream, that'll make them freaked out and then they'll make them go. And Meryl is suddenly shocked when he sees something or someone has jumped onto the roof very, very easily. And suddenly it has run into the fields. So the next morning, Officer Paskey returns and they're, and she's there to go talk to Graham about the visit the night before. She talks to Morgan and learns that, and he learns that a baby monitor can kind of be used like a radio. And she's like, well, you can't like talk back, but you can listen in. So that planted, that's a planted seed. Mm-hmm. And then he also tells Meryl that she thinks it's good that he moved in after, you know, well, you know. And then, so we're kind of, we know a tragedy has happened on the, to the family. We know that in the family photo, the wife is not there anymore. Their mother, the children's mother, is gone. Mm-hmm. And that Meryl is Graham's younger brother who's come to help out since her death. So the two of them, you know, they're talking to Officer Paskey. They don't know how to describe the whoever it was. They said it they can't describe who visited their place the night before. It's brought up that Graham left the church also. And because she's like, you know, maybe it's someone who has something against you or whatever. Right. And Graham's like, well, I don't think anyone was really, you know, out angry. To get me or angry because I left the church.
Yeah.
So then it's brought up. Or hold on, I already said that. So, and then Bo is there asking for the remote because somehow the same show is on every station. And it's all news about the crop circles. I can't remember if it's only a certain part of the world. I think it was all
mostly
over.
In India.
Okay.
Like that first time when they first see that it happened somewhere else too, it was like a bunch of sites in India.
Yeah. So it's there. It's on the news and it's a kind of a big deal. So then later the family goes into town to run some errands. Morgan goes to buy a book on extraterrestrials. That's what he wants to find. He and Bo go do that. Graham goes to the pharmacy to get asthma medicine for Morgan. But it takes a while because the pharmacy clerk, she just needs to do confession, even though he's not a father anymore.
She's so annoying.
I love that actress too. Yeah. Merritt Weaver. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. She's in just so much like Nurse Jackie. She's in a lot of shows and she's definitely recognizable as she was like very young when she did this, like a young adult. And now she's, she's in a lot of very critically acclaimed shows at this point. So she has to do her confession and Graham's like, I'm not a father anymore. She's like, yeah, I know. But hold on. I did like 37 swears and asks if douchebag is a swear. And it's a funny scene. So Meryl goes to the Army recruiting office and the man there mentions that the creatures are checking things out before the rest of them arrive. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting scene.
Militaristic strategy. Like he's comparing the crop circles and everything to what you would do if you were invading another country.
Yes. And it's also really revealed that Meryl was a minor league player and he had a record for the best batting record. Like he got it the farthest away, but he also had a record for the most strikeouts.
Yep, because he swung at everything.
Yeah, he's like, it felt wrong not to swing, is what he says. So the family goes to eat and Graham sees a man named Ray, played by M. Night Shyamalan, and the two of them make eye contact and Ray leaves in his car in a hurry. And then once they're home, the baby monitor goes crazy and it picks up dun-dun-dun, alien clicking communications. So then later that night, Graham is bringing out dinner to his dog, Isabel, and she's going pretty crazy. Graham gets his flashlight to go investigate, and he sees something alien in the fields.
Yeah.
It's kind of in the shadows. He returns into the house. The children are at the sink, kind of washing dishes. Meryl is reading his little army pamphlet, and Graham finally says, okay, let's turn on the TV and watch the news, because he didn't want them just, like, stuck on the TV, like, just ruminating on this. And then they see there are more crop circles and lights in the sky.
Yeah.
Over, I think, Mexico?
Yeah, I think at that point, it was.
Yes. So then the children have fallen asleep at this point. Meryl and Graham are chatting about, you know, just life, what's happening, what's going on. Meryl asks, he's like, can I just have some comfort? Because he seems like he comes to his big brother, for some comfort and advice. Because he's always had kind of, not to be punny, but like fatherly, like, you know, words of comfort. Graham says there are people who see lights of the UFOs and they could be thought of as signs or coincidences. Graham mentions their last words his wife said, you know, he's like, she's, you know, she didn't make any sense. She just told you to swing away and for me to see. I don't really, he didn't really know what it meant. And then he goes, and Graham also says, no one's watching over us, though.
Yeah.
Basically, he's lost his faith completely and that they're on their own. The next morning, Meryl is still watching the news, but he's in the closet at this point, and the crafts are still up there in the sky, but invisible because a bird has hit one and fallen out of the sky. So then Morgan and Beau are reading Morgan's alien book, and they both have little tinfoil hats on. Morgan tells Graham about his book, and he says there are two possible reasons the aliens are there. Exploration, or they're hostile, meaning they've used up their own resources and are there to acquire something from the Earth, basically. Then the reverie, or their kind of conversation's interrupted by a phone call. And someone on the line says, Father, and there's a clicking, and the line goes dead. Graham goes to, he announces, I'm going to Ray's house. I'm pretty sure he just called me. So he goes over there. He knocks on the door. He's looking for Ray. And it says on the front, veterinarian.
Yeah.
So he notices that Ray's office is kind of askew. The chair is turned over. Furniture's on the floor. And then he sees Ray in the car. He approaches the car and he notices there's a little bit of blood on Ray's flannel shirt. He tells Graham, he says, I've had your number written down. I've been wanting to call you. He's the one who it had hurt. He
is responsible for Graham's wife's death.
Yeah, for his wife's death. And he's like, you know, they don't really let, killers of ministers' wives into heaven, huh? You know, he just seems like he has a lot of guilt over what happened. He tells, you know, Graham, he says, I'm truly sorry. He says, I called you when one of them was inside the house. And he said, you know, what were the chances she'd be there when I fell asleep? Talking about that night when his wife died. He also says aliens don't think they like water. He said, I'm going to the lake.
Right.
That's where I'm going to go. And also one of them's locked in the pantry and then he leaves.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting, like, and kind of it supported their whole relationship with the fact that Ray wasn't drunk when he hit Graham's wife. Like he fell asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that, you know, because obviously anybody would struggle to forgive anyone for being responsible for the death of a loved one, even if it wasn't intentional, even if it was an accident.
Yeah.
And then obviously Graham's character being, you know, a man of faith and, you know, a servant of religion, would be held to a higher expectation of forgiving someone for making a mistake like that.
Yeah.
But I think that the choice to make it not a drunk driving accident makes you more believable that Graham would be able to swallow any anger or resentment or whatever and like have a conversation with this man and not just like punch him in the face or like try and kill him or whatever.
Yeah. And Ray, it just seems like he wasn't completely ostracized. Right. So it seems like
it like truly was an accident, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I think it would be regarded very differently if it was like different circumstances.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, at home, Meryl sees a home movie that was given to the news and it actually shows the alien. And that scene's really crazy and terrifying. Excuse me. And it's a children's birthday party, I think I want to say in South America.
It was Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Brazil. And the alien is kind of comes out from behind. Yeah,
like you kind of see him almost full figure, like kind of blurry, but like full daylight.
Yeah. And he's like, he's super freaked out. So, meanwhile, at Ray's place, Ray's gone and it's just Graham there. And he goes into the house and tries to psych out the alien. He's like, I'm here. I'm ready to put you in the paddy wagon. And he's like, paddy wagon? What the hell am I saying? But he's trying to be like, well, you don't care about the hoax. You know, it's not, you know, come out. So he grabs a knife to kind of try to look under the pantry. And an alien hand reaches out from under the pantry door. And he ends up chopping the fingers off of the alien. And it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
So Graham goes back home and he returns to find all three of them, Meryl, Beau, and Morgan, are now all wearing tinfoil hats. Graham takes a vote. He says, I heard from somebody that these creatures don't like water. So we can either go or we can stay. And he gets outvoted. They want to stay. Morgan's like, I want to stay here because this is where mom was and I want to stay here. And they all kind of outvote him after a little bit of a disagreement. So they agree and they board up the house and they're like, well, what is that going to do? Meryl asks. And he said, well, they seem to have trouble with like doors, pantry doors. Mm-hmm. So they board up the house and they stay and make home and hunker down. They make some last meals, I guess their last meals are just something that they all really enjoy.
Yeah, they have, everybody gets to pick exactly what they want to eat and they all make something different for everyone.
Yeah. And so they're sitting at the dinner table and no one wants to eat. And Morgan's like, well, why don't we just say a little prayer? You know, Bo has a bad feeling. And he's like, we don't do prayers in this house.
I'm not wasting one more minute of my life on prayer.
Yeah. And Morgan and Bo are really upset. They're crying. And he's like, stop crying, just eat. And he's like, I'm just going to eat all your food. And everyone's crying. And then
he's crying.
Yeah. It's a very Hallmark moment.
Very intense. Yeah. Well, and like, I remember in that point, because, you know, he cries and then Morgan suddenly like gets up and like walks over and like hugs Graham. And so like Graham hugs him back. And then Bo comes over on her own and then he grabs Meryl and pulls him in. So like the four of them are in this little group hug, which I thought was actually, it was sweet, but it was actually also kind of odd because they had really been fighting. Like Morgan was furious with Graham. Well, he was like, I hate you.
I hate you.
Like, and then a moment later, Morgan is the one that got up and went and hugged Graham.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a disconnect there, but it's just definitely the family is struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. So they all, he tells the kids to stop crying. Eventually they're all hugging, because they're just all really hurting about this grief. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they also forgot that Isabel, their dog outside.
Oh yeah. They'd already boarded everything up and she was still out
and
there.
And she was barking and all that. And suddenly her barks are intensifying. And then there are yelps and then there's silence. Mm-hmm. So the aliens are finally here and they try to get in many, many different ways. And eventually the family, they have to retreat to the basement. And that's where they're able to hold off the aliens for a little while. And then there are some jump scares where Morgan is grabbed through a coal chute. Mm-hmm. And Meryl and Graham are successfully able to get Morgan out of the alien's grasp. But now he's so kind of freaked out. He had an asthma attack. And Graham has to help talk Morgan through it, you know, through calming down.
Because they don't have his inhaler.
Yeah, it's up in the house upstairs. So then at this point, you get more of a flashback about Graham's wife and her death. And then suddenly, him like coming to the accident, you know, Cherry Jones is there, like there was an accident. And he's like, What ambulance is she in? And she's like, she's not in an ambulance. She's being held together by the truck. Mm-hmm. And she shouldn't be alive right now. So, you know, you need to go talk to your wife. So it's, and then suddenly Graham is awake and Meryl tells Graham the aliens are leaving. But they did use poisonous gas and many, many people died. Mm-hmm. Morgan, he really needs his medicine. So they decide to go check it out. Meryl goes upstairs. He looks around. Nothing's there anymore. The house looks pretty trashed. Graham, they go upstairs. He's holding Morgan. He takes him over to the couch. And Beau's like, hey, people are like celebrating. And,
she's like, people on TV are doing this. And she starts like dancing.
She's like, does the like that thrusting thing. Yeah, yeah. Like that. That's really funny. So Graham's like, hey, do you want to see the TV? And Morgan nods, like kind of a weak yes. Mm-hmm. So he's wheeling over the television, and that suddenly when he notices the reflection of the alien has Morgan in his arms and he's like threatening him kind of.
Yeah.
And he has the little thing at his wrist. It seems to be like something that would kind of spout out the poisonous gas.
It's like
Morgan's
in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies where his web actually comes out of his body instead of out of an apparatus.
Yeah.
And so like the way that Tobey Maguire would shoot his Spider-Man web, like this creature has like a little syringe or plunger thing coming out of his wrist.
Yeah. Yeah. So now at this point in this moment, it shows Graham's face and it's like, what do you have to do? When you see signs or you think that there's like just coincidences? Mm-hmm. And then you see it's revealed now finally what his wife's final words are. And she tells him, tell Morgan, to not be so serious, still, have fun, still, play, tell Bo to, always listen to her big brother. And then she says, tell Graham. And he's like, I'm right here. She goes, tell Graham to see, I want him to see, and then tell Meryl to swing away. And then she dies. Mm-hmm. And then at this point, Graham puts it all together and he sees Meryl's bat on the wall. So he tells Meryl to swing away. And Meryl grabs the bat off the wall and he just starts swinging and hitting the alien. And he ends up hitting. It turns out the water is very bad for these aliens. It like burns their skin. And since Bo has this weird tic where she leaves glasses of half drunk water all over the place, he has a lot of ammunition, so to speak. So some of Bo's discarded glasses of water all over, and he's able to send them crashing onto the alien. And, you know, the alien is defeated, on the ground and crumpled up and all that stuff. So Morgan is taken outside by Graham. He's saved because he has asthma and he couldn't actually breathe in the poison because his lungs had kind of
When Meryl grabbed the bat and went to attack, the alien actually did like spew the poison into Morgan's face.
Yes. So then he's like, you're fine, because your lungs were closed up and you weren't able to breathe in the gas. You're going to be fine. Give him a moment. And Morgan wakes up and he seems to be okay, asking, did someone save me? And then at that point, Graham's faith is restored and he said, yeah, someone did save you. Mm-hmm. So sometime later, the weather has changed to show the passage of time. It's now winter. He is now a father again, putting his collar back on. Mm-hmm. And he is back in the church, and you can hear like laughing and playing, and it seems like everything's kind of come back to some sort of normal for his family. Yeah. And that's the end of Signs.
Well done.
I do what I can. Did you think this was scary?
Yeah, I did. It didn't rely a lot on darkness, which for me is usually a big thing that makes a film scary. A lot of its scary scenes took place in daylight. The first time he sees the figure standing out on the roof, obviously that was nighttime. And then when they're hiding down in the basement, that's dark. But like the whole pantry scene was, you know, a pretty frightening little like sequence of events. And that was full daylight. You know, they weren't leading.
It's like a sunny afternoon.
Yeah. Like, oh, and my like God. This sun dappled kitchen and there's the aliens in the pantry. And so, like, I think that that's almost more impressive to be able to make something frightening happen in daylight.
Yeah.
But yeah, the scene, the scary moment that had stuck with me the most, because I didn't really remember this very much. I had seen it close to when it came out and then had never watched it again until last week. But the one moment in it that had stuck in my memory was when the alien hand grabs Morgan in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, that was...
He's like, what?
Where's Morgan? I'm over here. Aside from it being scary, I just, you really love it. Like, you love the family. And even, you know, I have my struggles with Mel Gibson now, as many of us do, separating, you know, what has happened to him as a man, mm-hmm. and a member of our society, and separating that from his performances that he's done in his career. I think that, you know, he did a really great job. Joaquin Phoenix did a really great job. Cherry Jones was amazing. The child actors were both like fantastic performers. And so you really did get invested in this family and care about them and their connection and their relationships. And I think that was a really successful element of it, too. But like, I don't think it's like the scariest movie in the world. It definitely like had the right number of scary moments and a scary premise.
Yeah, suspenseful, definitely.
Yeah. Did you think it was scary?
I think I remember thinking it was suspenseful, and I was like, ooh, I felt like that a little bit.
Ooh, what's gonna happen?
especially when he looks outside and he sees that whatever it is outside
up on the roof.
Look, and it felt very much like a Nightmare at How Many Feet from the Twilight Zone.
Out the window. He looks out on the roof.
Yeah, and he sees something on the wing, and he's like, "You're like, ah!" And then suddenly it's gone. Mm-hmm. And you're like, "Was it actually something that you saw or no?" And you know how I feel about like unseen scary things.
Yeah.
Is it lurking out there? Can it get you? Turns out, yeah.
Sure can.
So I remember thinking it was scary. I rewatched it, and I think Deke watched it with me. So he was like, ooh, you know, like we all kind of, I watched it kind of vicariously through him, and it was fun. You know, I think it's a good movie that you can definitely watch with your family.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's like kind of off limits. Like The Happening, it's kind of not really.
Yeah, a little too graphic, a little too bloody.
And this one for sure you can watch with the kids. And enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some subtle things I had to explain, like the flashbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Like that to Deke. Like, you know, this is, you know, his wife died, and this is what he keeps dreaming about, is that moment with his wife. So I appreciated the different subtle little clues. Like, I didn't even notice, actually, until I rewatched it, that when something was wrong with their dog, he was like, I'll call the doctor, and Ray was the vet.
Yeah.
And that's why he wouldn't call him. So I was like, oh yeah, I just put it together. Mm-hmm. You know, how long has this movie been out?
Yeah.
But
I thought it was cool that the alien that had Morgan at the end, they did a close up on his hand at one point, and he was missing fingers. So he was the alien that had been in the pantry.
Yeah. So he came back to get his revenge.
Yeah. Because they were saying like all the aliens are gone, but this one didn't leave because he had a score to settle.
Yeah. He was not done with his family. So, and then I was wondering, you know, when I first watched it, like, why wouldn't they have their dog with them? Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, oh, but the dogs are being really unpredictable.
Yeah, that's true.
Dangerous to the children. So now as an adult with my own kids, I'd be like, well, of course I'm not going to bring them this unpredictable animal that might like attack my children.
Right.
Because if these creatures are coming and that it's really affecting the dogs, I wouldn't want them around my 5-year-old or however old these kids are. So I was like, that's so stupid. Why would they do that? And then I'm like, oh no, that makes sense.
Later
in life.
I actually had some, I finally did some trivia looking. You always do that when it's my recap, and I never do it when it's your recap. I have some factoids.
Good for you.
Thanks. I'm trying to grow and do better. And it's funny because a couple of the pieces of trivia that I found actually answered like questions or notes that I had written while I was watching it.
Okay.
Because one of the things is I actually thought it was kind of unusual that there was this really strong religious theme in this film. I couldn't think of that being really present in any of his other projects. And I was like, oh, I wonder if it was Mel Gibson's influence. Like they gave him just this totally basic alien script. And he was like, oh, no, no, he has to be a man of God.
Yeah.
But
is that true?
There's been a statement though that M. Night Shyamalan thinks that the scariest thing in the film is that a good man could lose his connection with God.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, so, you know, M. Night Shyamalan must actually have some, you know, faith element in his life philosophy or in his life, that he would look at it from that perspective. And that M. Night Shyamalan wanted Mel Gibson for this role because he's, quote, the guy you believe would protect his family at all costs.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, well, you probably also wanted him because he's like a multi-million-dollar draw in any film.
Nah,
that couldn't have had anything to do with it. Another thing that I noticed when I first put it on the opening credits, I was like, dude, does he think he's Hitchcock? And Tom's like, yeah, he does think he's Hitchcock. I'm like, oh, that's right, he does think he's Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And because the opening credits are very Hitchcockian. But then I read that he cites The Birds and Night of the Living Dead and Invasion of the Body Snatchers as influences for this film. And he had the cast watch The Birds several times during production of the film. And then the composer was asked to purposely reference classic film scores from similar genres, including Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Psycho. And that the opening music and the main 3-note motif is strikingly similar and probably a reference to both the theme of Psycho and the theme of The Twilight Zone, which you mentioned. So all of those like were definitely in his head when he was creating, you know, like the style of the movie. Those references. This was actually kind of a sad tidbit. That M. Night Shyamalan scene where Ray is in the truck and he talks to Graham about the death of his wife. They shot that scene a day after a member of M. Night Shyamalan's family had died.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that's sad.
That's really sad. The scene when where they filmed when Graham had the last conversation with his wife when she's pinned against the tree with the truck, that shooting that scene was scheduled for September 12th, 2001.
Jeez.
They did actually film it after the cast and crew had a candlelight vigil. And then the last thing, because you kind of mentioned that the relationship between Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix, like their characters in the film, Mel Gibson is 19 years older than Joaquin Phoenix. And he's supposed to be like his, you know, big brother or whatever.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, the character of Graham Hess was originally written as an even older character. Paul Newman turned the role down and so did Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Clint Eastwood in this movie?
No.
Like, and or the idea that Clint Eastwood would be playing Joaquin Phoenix's brother.
Yeah. No, that seems wrong.
Yeah. No, Clint Eastwood's like 80.
I think I know also that Mark Ruffalo was.
Mark Ruffalo was. Yeah, he was going to be that character, but then that was when he had that brain tumor diagnosed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he had to pull out to have brain surgery.
Yeah. He's like, I just got to get a thing done.
Yeah. I got, sorry, guys. I know I was going to do this movie, but I got to go have my skull cracked open.
It's just interesting, like, how much a movie is impacted or, like, when they, it's just kind of just the
happenstance.
How people who have open availability, you know, who a director likes, you know, who wants to play, be in the movie, how that changes entirely the feel of it. It's pretty interesting. And we as viewers have no idea until we read later. We're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then you can't imagine it being any other way.
Yeah.
Because I guess the sheriff's character, Cherry Jones's character, was written as a man.
Yeah.
And then I guess at some point they, you know, I don't know if she auditioned for it or they it just struck them to cast her in that role. And so they just, you know, made the really easy swap of making her a female law enforcement officer.
Yeah.
But yeah, something like that. I love her
so much. She's like one of my favorites. So.
Yeah. So that's The Happening and Signs.
The two. I really enjoy both of them. I wouldn't say they're just like, oh my God, do you want to watch the scariest movie ever? Mm-mm. But, you know, they all bring something to the table.
He's a storyteller.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's scarier than others, but he spins a good yarn.
Yeah.
And these both are that.
Yes, definitely. So I think that overall the library of films he's made are really, it just could depend on your mood. You can watch, if you're in the mood for something really sad, you can watch something if you want. You're like, I just want to get the crap scared out of me. You know, he has something for everybody, or something that you can watch on a family night. Like, let's watch something suspenseful in the wheelhouse of maybe Alfred Hitchcock, but maybe more modern time, you know, updated kind of movie that would without being a Jordan Peele kind of avenue way to go. But
I did, I was fun. Looking at, the movies of his that maybe that we didn't talk about that I was like, oh, I hope we didn't miss any. Like, you know, I didn't make sure that we were exhaustive and we were planning these episodes. Some of them we'd like mentioned when we first introduced that we were going to do this project. It was Servant, that the TV show that we really like. Old, which I don't know how you felt about that one.
I never watched it. And I also heard not watch it.
It wasn't the best. It wasn't the worst, but it was like we were just saying, like it's an interesting story. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
It is weird. I only saw it once. I don't remember being scary, but you don't, it's mysterious. It's a mystery. Like you don't know what's happening. These people don't know what's happening. It's like, you know, it's a desert island, like what's going on. And so it's, letting the rope out a little bit at a time of, having the viewer figuring things out along with the characters in the film of what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought he's really good at that.
Yeah.
And so I thought that element was pretty good. I mean, I don't think you'll love it, but I think you should watch it.
I'll watch it
one time.
I think that a lot of his movies to me kind of feel like long form Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah.
Very well written. And I grew up watching it. So I think that's kind of probably why I enjoy his movies so much. Yeah. And it resonates. And I think it's, I always go back to it.
Yeah. Another one that like, I think also falls into that, like a Twilight Zone setting is, and he didn't direct this, but he was a writer and producer on it, was Devil. Do you remember that one where it was the group of people that get stuck in the elevator?
Yes.
And one of them is the devil?
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, I love that movie. And I remember being really surprised when I realized that it was his. Mm-hmm. Because it felt a little bit more, not like run-of-the-mill, mm-hmm. but just kind of less outside the box than his stuff usually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think that that would have anything to do with him directing it but he also wasn't the sole writer on it like he is with most of his films. So he's like a contributing writer and producer, but that's a really great film. And then the one when I go down his catalog, Lady in the Water is the one that I've never seen and I have no desire to.
It's okay. It's just like a drama. There's nothing really scary about it.
Does it have Paul Giamatti in it? Is that what I'm thinking of? Okay.
Yeah. And Bryce Dallas Howard, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's in it also. She plays the lady.
Oh, she's the lady?
she's the lady.
The water lady?
She's the water lady. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah. You know? I do really like Paul Giamatti.
Me, too. I love him so much in, like, Sideways. Yeah. He's just really funny and amazing. And he also narrates Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered. Well, not the whole thing. He does the
introduction.
The opening part. Yeah. Which is a blast. So
yeah, but I think that overall we did a pretty good job of representing his body of work for people that are fans.
And I think that a lot of people who are filmmakers now kind of probably take some influences from him, and he took some influences from a lot of the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of connected in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
These movies that we're enjoying now in the the early 2020s,
he kind of like maybe we don't know how much he is the reason that the field opened up to new ideas in horror film.
Yeah. So I was going to say it's fun to see where it goes and what's new, what's old, what's been being retold in a different way or a different perspective or I don't know. I really like that kind of reinventing something. Like in The Conjuring, an old haunted house story made into something where it's still a haunted house story, but how can we make this like so much scarier and not just like the same old, same old, same old. And it can be really engrossing and scary and enjoyable to experience as a viewer. So.
And I think that M. Night Shyamalan identifies like scary things that aren't on the standard list of scary things.
Yes.
Like just going back to him saying that the scariest thing in this film is a good man losing his connection with God. You know, it's like, well, we've got demons, we've got witches, we've got serial killers, we've got all of these standard scary things. And he's like, what about aging? Guys, what do you think about aging? How scary is that? And you're like, well, that's fucking scary.
Father Time is scary.
Yeah.
Well, that is actually something that is visited a lot in different, like, for example, The Walking Dead or other shows or movies where there is an apocalypse of some kind and somebody who you always think is going to be a predictable person who's always going to be a certain way is suddenly not. Mm-hmm. And what do? And what kind of circumstances cause that or led to that? It can be the loss of a wife or the loss of a loved one or your child dies or something happens and suddenly you're not so predictable anymore. And that's scary. Mm-hmm. And that can be very realistic because it happens to people. So, in an apocalypse, is the policeman suddenly going to be like, you know what? I'm just taking this. I don't even care about you. Get away from me. Like in Dawn of the Dead, he was like, I just want to see my brother. I don't give a shit about you. Or the TV salesman guy suddenly rises up to the occasion. So like, how do these circumstances change people? Mm-hmm. So, and then that too, how do you lose your faith if something like that happens to your family? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
All right. Well, so we can put a pin in our M. Night Shyamalan project. I'm glad that we accomplished that because it would have been a really big, a glaring omission.
Yeah.
In a horror movie podcast to not
mention him.
Yeah. Some time.
Yes. But so we will, I will be going on my honeymoon and I'll be coming back. And we
thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Well, unless I decide to live there.
Yeah, but you're like Brussels.
They don't want the Italians don't want me. Let me get out. But when we come back, we will start our a little bit through the summer project, which is late '90s, early aughts, teen, young adult horror movie. Mm-hmm. cast.
So this movies. Is really directed toward the people our age.
Yeah.
Like these are the movies from our high school, early college years where it was all mid-20s people playing high school students, or it was set in a high school setting or set in a college setting. It was like this young cast of characters in some, you know, sometimes cringy horror film.
Yep. And to open it, to kick it off.
Cringiest of them all.
Yes. We're going to start with 1996's I Know What You Did Last Summer, which I am so excited to share with my daughter. We're like, we got to watch this. This is very, it's questionable. We got to watch it. It'll be great.
But then you can follow it up with Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah,
do a little Jennifer Love Hewitt sandwich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, watch it. Check it out.
Go revisit it.
Feel
young again.
Enjoy it. All right. Until next time. Bye.